four-panel geek shows show all about comics, manga. It's drawn on a piece of paper with some speech bubbles on it. We'll talk about it.
Yes. Here we are again, Ben.
Yes.
How are you doing?
I'm pretty good.
You have a good weekend?
It's been an amazing weekend. I was at a geek club night.
A geek club night?
Yes, a geek. A geek club night.
Okay, sorry. I heard geek.
So, yes, I've had a good weekend. What about yourself?
It has been an interesting weekend.
Oh?
It's just been kind of... Everything is in a transition phase at home, so it's been fun. Anyway, yes, today we have another packed show filled with all sorts of things.
But first,
yes,
the news.
I wish we had a news jingle.
I know, you say this every time.
No, I usually say it on the Geek Show. This is the first time I've said it here.
Still, it's a repeat thing. We could get that on a t-shirt by now.
I wish I had a jingle. Wouldn't that be wrong?
Only if you want it to be.
Anyway, in the news this week.
First up, Faith No More, after 18 years since their last release, are bringing out a new album. And their debut single, Superhero, is going to be coming out via Marvel.com.
It's a bit of an unusual move.
Superheroes and Marvel? I'm guessing...
Well, yeah, I can understand that, but I mean, I thought Faith No More broke up several years ago, didn't they?
Well, I'm not sure when they broke up, but they're apparently back together.
Yeah.
So with 18 years since they last released a studio album, they could have broken up there and then, and they've got back together because they love Spider-Man.
The irony is, most people will never have heard a Faith No More song except for Epic.
Yep.
It'll be the only Faith No More song they know.
Well, like I said, 18 years, there's a lot of the current Marvel fans weren't born 18 years ago.
Yeah.
But to tell the truth, it might be a good way to get to a new demographic.
Actually, yeah, they've got a point there. I mean, the easiest way to make fans these days is to sing or write or draw superheroes.
Yep, so when you are going through Marvel themselves, a huge company that's got a large influence over the geek community, it's a perfect way to get yourself out to the younger demographic and a bit of an older one as well, because the fan base is huge and got a variety of people.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually a pretty clever marketing move.
Yep, smart move.
Yes. Anyway, we'll watch that with interest. I'm actually quite interested in what the song's like.
Yeah.
Because I did like Faith No More back in the day.
You can listen to it now. It's
can
up
you?
On their YouTube.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. You should have told me that first. I would have been listening to it already and not to you. Anyway, moving on. Tell me about this hotel.
Oh, yes. Taiwan's Eden Motel.
Motel, is it?
Yep.
Okay.
So what it's got down here has now got its very own Batman-themed room. Yeah.
Okay. Are we talking kids' bedroom type, you know, with Batman wallpaper and Batman sheets?
Oh, no. This is
Are we talking the kind of Batman room that Batman would have in his Batcave when he invited some lady back?
It's sort of a mix of the two. The walls are done up sort of like a cave. There's a painting of Gotham City up on the wall. It's got a large queen-size bed with a giant Batman headboard. It's got a chair shaped like the tumbler. It's seriously a mixture between what Batman would have and what a 10-year-old would have. It finds the nice balance there.
It sounds insane.
Yeah, but apparently there must have been a demand for it. And since this hotel charges by the hour...
What?
Means, hey, there must be enough demand to have a Batman room if they're charging by the hour. So, yeah. If you want to live like Batman, kind of.
I'm curious which superhero... when they were deciding about which superhero to follow when decorating the room. Did they go through several? Was it done by vote? You know, was it like, okay, Spider-Man, Captain America, the Hulk, how would that work?
Well, I think that's why you choose Batman, because Batman's easy. Stick a Batman symbol on something. It's like, this is no longer chess draws. Bat draw. Like, cause it's got a symbol on it. So
yeah, you couldn't use the Yes logo from Superman, because then everything becomes super. And if it doesn't work, if it doesn't work in a super fashion, then it's not going to happen, is it?
It looks like literally everything in this room has a bat symbol on it. That's how you do Batman.
So does that mean the people, when they go into the room and they end up with the bat symbol on them, do they brand them like cattle?
I think you have to wear a t-shirt to go in the room. Actually, they've got, I think that's a Dark Knight poster on the in the bathroom wall. Like, they've got a large widescreen TV embedded in a giant bat symbol. It's just bat-tastic.
Oh, that was my level of humour. Anyway, moving on. Wait, remember we were talking a couple of weeks ago about the Supergirl TV series that CBS are looking to make?
Yes.
Well, things have moved on since then, and they moved on quite quickly. They've now signed up Helen Slater, who played the original Supergirl in that awful Supergirl movie that I told you about, and Dean Cain, who played Superman in Lois and Clark.
Yeah,
they're both going to be on this Supergirl TV series.
Well, this seems like a thing that sort of happens with this Superman lineage. Like, we're talking before the show. They've also featured in Smallville. Like, they'd like to have that little nod towards their previous incarnations.
The weird thing is, it's starting to get a bit like any show that involves a wormhole of any sort. It is getting a bit like that, because half the characters from Farscape ended up in Stargate.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, okay, the only thing that you guys had in common was that you both involved wormholes.
Basically, everyone from Firefly were in Halo ODST.
Yeah.
Like, that was basically the closest you got to a Firefly game.
Yeah.
Like, they were them playing themselves, basically. Oh, Mark Hamill was
the villain
in the original Flash. And
was
in
he?
New Flash. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Ah.
In the live-action one, of course. Yeah.
Hmm.
Wow. So, yeah, seems like the whole DC are into that whole bringing back the old guys. Just, I think it's a nice nod to the old fans.
Yeah.
Although it can sometimes be like a...
Well, Lois and Clark, The Adventures of Superman, was massive when it was on TV.
Oh, yeah.
Had a huge following. And I know loads of people like the Supergirl movie, but only because Helen Slater was playing Supergirl and not because the movie was actually any good.
So then they're basically taking the only good part of that film and they're sticking in a new one. That makes sense.
Yeah. Anyway, yes, moving on.
Take what worked and scrap the rest.
Yes.
She worked. The fact that Supergirl exists worked. That is all.
Yes. Anyway, moving on. Again, coming back to news that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, Lucifer.
Yes.
All right. Fox is making their Lucifer TV series, which is based on the spin-off graphic novel series from Sandman, involving yep. Lucifer Morningstar, or as he's also known, Satan, the devil, the enemy, the Antichrist. He's not the Antichrist. It's supposed to be his son is the Antichrist, isn't it? But yeah, you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Anyway, Rush actor Tom Ellis has been cast as the lead role in the upcoming drama.
Yep.
I'm a bit curious. Do you know who Tom Ellis is?
Yes, I do.
Okay. What do you think of him as Lucifer? Do you think he'd work?
I actually do. I think it could be a really suited match. Like, I haven't seen him act that much, but
yeah.
What I have is sort of similar to how he should in this.
Yeah.
Like, he's played similar roles, sort of the grumpy, serious guy.
Yeah.
So, I can see it going quite well.
Hmm. I don't know. I can't honestly remember what he's been in. I know he was in Merlin, and I thought he was good in that one. But, yeah. I'm curious as to what he's going to be like, because I do like the character. I do love the graphic novel series.
Yeah, this thing, because you're so fond of the comic itself, you've got a lot of hesitation about stuff.
Yeah,
because you don't want them to ruin something you love.
I mean, I hope they do it justice. I hope they, they stick to their game, stick to the game plan, and just, you know, show some respect to the source material.
Yeah.
Anyway, not showing some respect to the source material is plushies.
A lot of plushies have respect for the source material.
This one don't, because the source material is basically an 8-foot monster that'll tear you apart. These are plushies. They're available in Japan. They are plushies, and they're part of a lottery goods campaign. Plushies of the Terraformars. You know the giant mutant cockroaches?
Yeah.
That live on Mars and are the enemy in the manga series of the same name? Well, you can get them as plushies now that you can hug and go to sleep with.
As you've always wanted to.
Yes. I mean, it looks... I'm not even going there. I just can't think of anything creepier than that.
Of all the lovable, huggable things in all of anime and manga, this is probably the last thing on the list I can think of.
Hell, we could make plushies of Ben and sell them, and, you know, it would be a lot better. A lot better. In fact, I think it'd be a bestseller, Ben.
I don't think I have the same following that Terraformars has, though.
You're a lot more huggable, though.
True. But I'm not loved, so Terraformars has got such a huge following that I know...
They just like the violence. I wouldn't call that love.
Except people do make their connection to stuff, so they love the show and they're like, hey, I can get a plushie of this horrific cockroach man. I want it and I will love it and I will hug it.
Yeah.
Even though it is the least lovable and huggable thing in the manga.
Oh, God. It looks like I can't even describe it. It just looks wrong on so many levels.
I can describe it. I think it's a weird muscular man with antennae in a brown color. It looks like it's from an uncomfortable Japanese game, like where they don't quite get things. Yeah,
where proportions don't really matter.
This thing, like... I wouldn't want to go to sleep in a room with this thing knowing it's there.
Yeah.
It is terrifying looking.
I just keep remembering, you remember those old 80s horror movies like Child's Play and The Puppet Master and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would take one look at this and go, nope, not. I'm not staying in this house. That goes all I do.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on to other kind of merchandise tie-ins. This one is... between a water cooler company called Aqua Clara and Attack on Titan.
Yep.
But this one's actually pretty cool, right?
Yeah, we know how our fan base love water.
And Attack on Titan.
We're bringing you all the pressing news on the water situation.
Yes, all the latest hydration news just for you. Anyway, the company is offering a clear file of its water cooler carrying Hydration Core members to anyone who purchases a dress-up server cooler Attack on Titan panel featuring Eren Levy or the Colossal Titan. Now, the image on the image of the water cooler corp is basically, you know, it's Eren Levy and Mikasa, and basically Eren is in his Titan form.
Yep. And right? But it's been edited. So instead of, like, the
swords and rocks and stuff like that,
they're all carrying water jugs.
Yeah, the big bottles that you find on water coolers. So that's a special one. But two lucky winners will also get, and this is the good bit, a 1-to-1 scale maneuver gear constructed under the supervision of Hajime Isayama.
Yes.
And it looks fantastic.
This thing's better than a lot of, like, movie props I've seen. It looks amazing.
I think this is actually made out of metal.
Might be. Say, just whatever it's made of, it looks perfect.
Yeah, it looks the business.
I am considering getting a water cooler just for my chance to get one of these.
Have it shipped to you all the way from Japan?
Yeah. Actually, isn't this only buying the faceplate, not actually the cooler?
If you buy the faceplate, then...
Geek Show expenses, water cooler faceplate.
Also given as part of the prize, there are going to be 10 Levy figures sitting in an armchair holding a cup.
Okay.
So yeah, all you Levy fans, which mainly consist of women for some reason.
Not for some reason. He's bishy and
yes, I was being sarcastic. But yeah, all you Levy fans, you can have Levy sitting in an armchair, drinking a cup of tea, looking at you every day if you entered this competition. Anyway, that was the news.
We'll be back in a bit with our reviews of the week.
Is your senpai giving you the doki dokis? Maybe if you listen to the geek show's Keyframe, you'd know enough about cartoons and anime to get senpai to notice you.
Hi everyone and welcome back to 4Panel. I forgot which show it was for a second there.
You do this every time.
I don't do it every time, but it's just my brain shuts down for some reason.
I've been editing these, you forget every time.
Okay.
Or you can hear the cogs moving before you say the name.
It's because I can't... Whatever. Anyway, we're in the review section. We're in the review section, so yes. Yeah. What have we got today, Ben?
Today, I will be talking about the first issue of Spider-Gwen.
Ooh, you shared the cover of this on Facebook.
Yes.
I quite like it.
Because I got... managed to get my whole hands on the variant cover that has like a chibi Spider-Gwen. And so anyway, recently the Spider-Verse event happened where Spider-Men and Spider-Women from all across the universes converged into a giant multi-character thing. And one of the newer Spider-Men to come across was Spider-Gwen. Gwen Stacy, if she had been bitten by this radioactive spider rather than Peter, and fans really liked her, so she's now got her own spin-off series, Spider-Gwen. And this basically starts right off from after the Spider-Verse events have happened. She's still pretty new to the Spider-Manning things up, but she's already got her name as the menace of the city, as Spider-Men seem to do. But she's like, she looks back on like what's happened. She's like, I met a spider pig and everyone loved him. So why not love me? So I'm going to work to try and better myself. So this basically is her coming to terms with who she now is and meeting her first real supervillain, which is the Vulture. Like, so I thought it was a nice, like, one of the main bad guys, but he doesn't get featured that much in the normal Spider-Man anymore. So I thought it was nice to bring him back for Spider-Gwen. So, yeah, it's got all the, it's got all like the wit and charm you expect from Spider-Man. But I really like Gwen as a character. I think she's a lot more interesting than the comics ever really let her to be. Because she was a bit one-dimensional in Spider-Man. She was there to be a love interest, then die. Like, she's been brought back a number of times for whatever reasons. Clones, magic, illusions. The fact she's now got her own thing, it's great. And she's one of the best-designed Spider-Mans I've seen in a while. Like, she's got a whole white parkourist thing going on, and looks very nice. So I'm very impressed with the new Spider-Gwen.
Okay, right. Moving on, Doctor Who for me. Starting cool. off with, it's the new adventures with the 10th Doctor.
Yes, the new with the two generations back of Doctor Who.
Yes, with David Tennant. But actually, I'm surprised. The thing that surprises me is how well Doctor Who works as a comic book.
Yeah.
Right. In this one, it's basically, it involves the Weeping Angels, which by that point, didn't every story involve the Weeping Angels? This one, though, has, like, they're trapped in World War One. The Doctor is there, and there's a Latin American nurse with him, female, obviously. And the Weeping Angels have them trapped in a church, and there's soldiers being sent throughout time, some being burned as witches, some being, you know, ending up in the gladiatorial Colosseum in ancient Rome. And the Doctor's explaining what the Weeping Angels do, because this church is basically a field hospital, and everybody thinks, oh, it's angels, oh, so holy, kind of thing. It's not a complete story. It's not a complete story in here. It's only about a third of it, I suppose I'd call it.
Yeah.
going by, you know, kind of going by how the story references the chapter before and what happens afterwards. It might be a third of it, it might be a quarter of the story, but it's incomplete. And I do want to know what happened before and what happens next.
Yeah.
Because it is very, very good at pulling you in. It's very, very good at pulling you in. The writing is actually remarkably close to some of the better writing of the TV series.
Oh, really?
And it does portray the character of the 10th Doctor really, really well. You know, just the way he thought, the way he spoke, that sort of thing. When he's, you know, when he's talking about, when they're talking about the word God comes up, and he's like, no, I've been mistaken for God a few times, and once at the devil. And he says it just so flippantly.
Yeah.
You know, and it really captures kind of who the Doctor is. But yeah, if you're a fan of Doctor Who, I got to say, I'm interested in seeing the rest of this before I would recommend it to people other than fans of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
But if you are a fan of Doctor Who, then it's well worth picking up. You know, it's colourful, it's bright, the characters are really well drawn, and the story works.
Yeah, for a spin-off thing, it seems to be really good, because there's a lot of spin-off stuff that just seems like a bit of a cash-in, but this seems like it's got the effort behind it.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Anyway, that was Doctor Who.
Yep.
What's up next?
Next, I'll be talking about Hellboy, Masks and Monsters, or as I like to call it, Hellboy and Friends. Because it is literally about Hellboy teaming up with people, basically. It's basically got two different stories in it. The first one is about the former Starman is doing a speech in Gotham City, when he is kidnapped by magic Nazis, as they to do. Of course, Batman is on the case trying to solve it, but Hellboy comes in because he's like, hey, I know this is your city and stuff, but this is kind of my jam. I do the whole Nazi thing and the magic thing. I know how to deal with this. So they team up to try and find out what's going on, try and stop the Nazis' plan and save the former Starman. They also team up with the current Starman, because he's like, I need to save my dad. My dad's sort of being kidnapped by Nazis. And the second story is about Ghost, who is a dead person who comes back as a ghost and has been killing, like, murderers and thugs and gangsters and stuff. Like, and Hellboy sent to go sort of stop her because, like, yeah, she's killing bad guys, but you're not meant to kill people. That's his job. So it's got a lot of the classic charm of Hellboy. It's got a lot of the, it's got beautiful artwork. Like, I really like Hellboy. He always uses black really well. Like, its use of space, its use of shading. I like the fact that every bad guy has more wrinkles on his face than anyone in the world. It's like all crumpled like an old bag. So it's just, present stories interestingly and unique. Hellboy is a very, like, different character to a lot of, like, superheroes, because he's kind of, this is his job. He's a lot more laid back. He's a lot more like, this is just what I do. I don't have the whole big name up in lights, do the big show. He just goes, he does the job. And it's just interesting seeing him working, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. I do like Hellboy. I am a fan. Right, moving on to a couple of unusual ones, but we'll start off with Skin Trade. Now, this was adapted for graphic novel form by Daniel Abraham and with illustration with artwork by Mike Wolfer. But the original story is by George R. R. Martin.
Yeah.
And it's all about werewolves. Just on the back... he wrote this graphic novel, features a character called Randy Wade. She's a survivor. She's followed in the footsteps of her father, became a police officer, and is now working for the PI trade. Her past still haunts her. What's worse, the vicious animal attacks that took her father's life have sprung up anew, claiming victims once again in this sleepy town. Martin's unique creative voice spins a modern-day classic horror tale, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, this is effectively a tale about werewolves and not in the style of Twilight. Right. This is basically werewolves being horrific, being vicious, being manipulative, being the kind of werewolves that you want, you know, the ones that actually make you a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
Vicious animals that see humans as prey, as food, as that sort of thing, or just played in the way. The artwork is, it's very kind of, as it's a little bit kind of early 2000s in this style, in the style. It's got an element of realism to it, but it's very kind of shade heavy. You know, it does like to use its shading quite a lot.
Yeah.
And it's got very kind of broad forehead, narrow eyes type thing.
Yeah.
But in general, it's actually pretty good. It's really well, it's really well detailed. The characters work, and the gore is gory. Truly is gory. But I think the thing that surprises me about this is the mythology. It touches on only parts of the mythology, but what it uses really well. Which I think is because the original story was written by George R. R. Martin. And it's a good read. It's an interesting read. If you're a fan of werewolves, then yeah, definitely read it. If you're a fan of superheroes, you're probably not going to find much in it.
Yeah.
But if you're a fan of comic books in general, then definitely read it.
Yeah.
Because this is a testament to how good a short story can be when it's turned into a graphic novel. Because that's all it was, first off. It was just a short story but written by George R. R. Martin after he won the World Fantasy Award. And now it's a graphic novel. And you can see just how... You can see just on the page. It's like a storyboard for a movie in parts.
Yeah.
You can see how it could work as a movie. You can see how the director might angle the shots, how he might have everything working together, you know, how the characters might play off each other, how the scenes might look. That's why I recommend this.
Cool.
You know, it is a very, very good read. And I think we got this through from Titan Books. Yes, we did. We got this through from Titan Books. So they've got some really interesting stuff there.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, because the next one I've got is from them as well, and that's even stranger.
Yep. Well, before you do that,
yes,
I shall be reviewing Fables, Happily Ever After, Part 9. Fables. This is actually the first time I've read any of the Fables series. I've heard great things about it. I'm a big fan of The Wolf Among Us, because it was an outstanding game. But this actually, I don't think Rose ever gets brought up in the game, does she? If you don't know Rose, Rose Red, sister of Snow White. And she's basically gone to find what happened to her mother and about her lineage.
Yeah.
So she goes to this cottage in the woods where her mum basically secluded herself away from everything to get away from what is basically a curse upon their family.
Yeah.
You see, their family has amazing magical powers. And it's split between all the doors. They can only birth daughters.
Yeah.
And their power is split between them. But like Highlander, there can only be one.
Okay.
And so they must hunt down and kill their other sisters till they have all the powers.
Sounds a bit like Highlander. Also sounds a bit like, you know, that Jet Li movie, the one where he goes around killing other versions of himself.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's some sort of premise, but they're... Mum, to get away from it, she basically gave her powers to one of her sisters and left. Just left everything alone.
Yeah.
Until eventually there was only one other sister who came, just in case she kept some powers.
Yeah.
And that she did. She kept gardening powers.
Yeah.
But with it, she stops her sister and she wins. You find out her life after that, her meeting a man... She was like, we can have one child, one child. But she had twins, two daughters, Snow White
and Rose Red.
So now, knowing this, Rose has to fight Snow White and try and defeat her before she's defeated. In this, it sets out her plan to do it. I'm not going to spoil it if you're going to read it. I say it very well thought out. The fact that I've played the game was enough for me to have enough knowledge to understand this.
That's unusual for a game.
Yeah, so it's like it mentions like relationships between Snow White and Bigsby.
Yeah,
and I know that relationship because I played that relationship. Really, except normally, I think this is one of the ones where I'm just too late into the series. If I hadn't played the games, I'd be completely lost.
Okay.
You'll probably be able to get into it if you were to start at the start of this arc, but this is a part 9.
Ah, right.
So
yeah.
Like, I am coming in very late into the story. And if it wasn't for that, I did some research beforehand, I'd have no idea what was going on. Yeah. I'm still asking questions. Like, it's very good, but I think it's one you have to read more of the series.
Yeah, but I think asking questions is a good thing about something like that, because it means that you're invested in the series, you're interested in it.
So the thing is, I think if I wasn't reading this for the show, I would just be like, what the hell, this is stupid. I wouldn't have put in the effort.
Yeah.
Like, it seems good, but I would say go out, get some of, like, you can get the big books of them now, the collections. Go read some of them.
Yeah.
Try and catch up a bit, and then you can go to these.
Okay, fantastic. Right. This is the last one for me today.
Okay.
In a bit, we will talk to you a little bit about something big that we're featuring on next week's show, but we'll tell you about that later. In the meantime, this is Kingdom of the Wicked by Ian Edgington, illustrated by Disraeli. You know, like I reviewed Ordinary a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Disraeli did the artwork on that as well. Now, I'm just going to read straight from the back here. War has come to Wonderland, and not Alice's Wonderland either. Stricken once again by the mysterious blackouts that plagued his childhood, Christopher Graham, the 21st century's premier children's author, finds himself torn between reality and the fantasy realm he dreamt up as a boy. Now suffering under the tyranny of a ruthless dictator and deluged in mud, blood and barbed wire, it's up to Chris to save the carefree world he once loved and bring harmony back to Castrovalva. Yet something nightmarishly dark haunts his every step.
Yeah.
It's got this is a very, very interesting graphic novel. It reminded me a little bit of you know, Alice Madness Returns?
Yeah.
Remind me a little bit about that, but better in terms of the story. It starts off with a rather creepy fairy story, which I'm sure I've read before. I am actually positive that I have read it before, and I think I read it in... You remember there was a magazine called Heavy Metal?
Yeah.
Right, I'm sure I've read the short story, the little short comic thing in Heavy Metal before. And it's about a town. It's a peaceful town where everybody knows each other and everybody's happy. And there are, you know, there are kids in the town. And two kids, one day, they decide, you know, they make friends with a boy who just appears in the town one day. And the boy says to them, "I'm a monster."
Yeah.
And the, you know, Tiny Tom Fishhead and Wavy Dave, the two boys from the town, they're like, "What does a monster do?" And so the boy tells him, and he says, "It's a lot of fun." So the two boys join this mysterious boy in doing things like putting needles into baby's porridge, putting acid into bottles of milk, various things like that. They cause havoc with the town. They become terror in the town, and so they are hunted and forced out of the town. And in their fear of reprisals from the adults, they run into the dark forest where the dark things are. And Wavy Davy is really, really hungry by this point.
Yeah.
And so Tiny Tom Fishhead bravely sets out into the dark forest to find some food for his friend, but falls victim to the dark things in there. And this is just the introduction, by the way. Wavy Davy keeps calling out for his friend and eventually pines away to nothing. And the mysterious boy appears in the dark forest and says, "I told you I was a monster." And that's just the introduction.
Yeah.
Right. This is a very, very dark and twisted story. Seriously. Okay. It's very dark, very twisted. A lot more so than Alice Madness Returns, because this doesn't try to make things look particularly evil and twisted. Sometimes they can look normal. I mean, you have teddy bears going to war and having like parts of the head shot off, and they look like teddy bears. They look like Bontacon and stuff like that. You know, the kind of teddy bears that you'd see in a charity shop or something like that.
Yeah.
But when they're being shot to pieces because of the dark forces I mentioned, it's kind of, I don't like this. You know, it gives you that uncomfortable feeling. It's something that's supposed to represent, innocence and childhood, and kind of you cuddle it when you go to bed, unlike those cockroaches we mentioned earlier. It's a very, very good story, though.
Yeah.
They do try and tie it into this whole idea of psychology a little bit, but what it is more so about is kind of getting in touch with your inner child again.
Yeah.
Learning to play, learning to imagine, letting things kind of happen instead of stressing over them all the time. There's no point. The basic message is life is too short to worry about every single detail, because that's when you start compromising on certain things, and compromise can lead to bad things. It can lead to good things, but it can equally lead to bad things. That's the basic message. Stick to your guns or don't do it at all. Which is very different from the message in Alice Madness Returns.
Yeah.
Because that's the closest thing I can link this to. I don't really know of anything
That's more setting than story. That's more setting. This is a fairy tale-like place, but it's twisted.
It is. Well, the thing is, the kingdom of Castrovalva is the kingdom that he visited as a boy.
Yeah.
Very much in the same way that Alice went to Wonderland.
Yeah.
But then in the game, Alice Madness Returns, Wonderland has become dark and twisted. And in this story, when he goes back as an adult, Castrovalva has become dark and twisted. It's been taken over by an evil force.
Yeah.
And that evil force appeared the last time he left, which is, again, similar to Alice Madness Returns. So there's a lot of parallels between the two. It's just, this is far more digestible.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to go through all these levels to get to the next bit of the story and stuff like that. It just carries on.
Yeah.
So you can sit there and enjoy it and take it at your own pace.
Yeah.
And you don't have to fight any monsters.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a six-year-old who goes, "What's that all about, Uncle?" My nephew did that. I was reading the book and he goes, "Oh, that looks pretty. Can I read it?" I said, "No, this is definitely not for kids."
Okay.
It's one of those books that it's difficult to kind of recommend, because it depends on what you're after.
Yeah.
I like this. I like this kind of story. I like the fact that they're taking normal things and giving them a twist and making them weird and unusual and slightly twisted.
Yeah.
I like that in a comic. I like when they just break away from what you think is normal.
Yeah.
And it gives the artist more expression. It gives the storyteller more scope to actually be imaginative, be creative.
Yeah.
And I like that sort of thing. So if you also like that sort of thing, then this is a recommendation, definite recommendation.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on.
Yep. Next, I've got From the New World, Volume 1.
Ooh.
Like, I remember you telling me this manga is very different from the anime.
Yeah.
So first I'll go into what the manga is about. It's based about a girl called Saki and her group of friends. They all live in a town that's sealed off by a rope. It basically seals the place, protect them from the horrible things that are outside. Now, everyone in this town has something called magic that everyone eventually gets. They go to their school, and once they learn their magic, once they've unlocked it, they go to the next set of school where they get to learn how to control this magic. Now, it is a very sort of cute and adorable and sweet manga, and to the point that it was almost sickeningly sweet. But things start to get twisted, and I think that's why it was so sweet. I like cute stuff, I like sweet stuff, but this is so over the top. It was getting to the point where I'm like, I can't deal with this. But I think it was just for the juxtaposition of how twisted it gets. Like, I don't want to go into details because they're great things, but the stories often start with one of her friends telling a tall tale about a thing that's going around, a dupe cat or a fake rat guy or something like that. And like, it sort of evolves to see where those stories came from, but in quite a twisted way. And it's interesting to see like these characters, like who are so sweet and so nice, and just see how they're dealing with these twisted things, even when they can't remember they're dealing with these twisted things. Like, I'm quite, like, undecided on this, because although I did love how it twisted, I liked how it changed in tone and stuff, it's still a lot to go through to get to that point.
Yeah.
It's like, when I'm not enjoying it for 90% of the time, does the really good 10% make up for it? But I think I want to give the next volume a go when it comes out, because it seems like it's getting more into an interesting position. Like, there's basically two stories in this. The second one ends in a place where I'm a lot more interested in what's going on. Like, it's got into some of the dark, gritty stuff that I'm interested in, rather than the kids having fun.
Yeah. I'm just going back to that whole 90%, 10% thing. I think if it's got Godzilla in, then it can work.
Yes.
But only if Godzilla's involved.
I'll find out when the next one comes out, I guess.
Yes. Okay. Anything else? Anything left? Oh, you've got one more left. This is the one you've been waiting for.
Yes. Art Schooled by Jamie Coe. This is basically a comic about a pretty, like, everyday guy who wants to be an artist and goes to art college. And his interactions with the very weird and unusual people that are in art colleges, are in art courses in university. And it's actually the tale of him making this book. Like, him going through for his project, like, a lot of people doing very artistic things. They were like, oh, I've done this picture of a guy having sex with a pig, and his face has been scratched off, and the pig is dead. It's because vegetarianism's the way to go. Like, and he's there like, I'm making a comic about my time here. And, like, a lot of people look down on him because he's not doing these crazy artistic things. But then he also kind of looks down on them because they read into a lot of stuff. Like, there's a point where they're looking at a art exhibit or that's, like, encrusted in diamonds. And there's two people talking, like, well, it's obviously talking about how cruel diamond mining is in Africa and how it's a terrible thing. It's like, no, this is talking about social commentary on the greed of people and how we should be giving it more to help people. Like, and they ask him, he's like, well, I don't think either of them are right, because why would he pay millions of pounds in diamonds if he was against the diamond mining? Why would he make a statement on money's going into the wrong place if he's spending all this money on this? And people just look down on him for it. So it's something I sort of resonated with, meeting arty people, sort of claiming I'm an artist myself. Like, a lot of the interactions are similar to things that I've gone through. But because of that, it meant I meshed with this story a lot more.
Yeah.
And it ended with something that I didn't know could happen with a comic. I felt hopeful for myself. I was like, wow. At the end of this, I was like, maybe I'm going to be all right. And when have you read a comic and at the end of it think, I'm going to be okay? I'm going to make something of myself.
I honestly don't think that's ever happened to me.
Exactly. So that's why this was such a shock. It was just a character that's so relatable, so hateable at the same time, because you see the perspective of other people. So I sort of get why people might not like me, but I get why I need to keep going despite these people not liking me. I need to do what I want to do, and it makes me hopeful for my future. And that is something I don't expect from a comic book. And it sort of opened my eyes to what comics could be. This might be me reading into it a bit too much, and the guy's going to be annoyed.
I don't think so.
So, yeah, Particularly if you are an artist or struggling artist, definitely pick this up. Art Schooled.
Yeah, we got that one from, I think we got that one from PG UK. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that one came from PG UK, Publishing Group UK. You'll find it on their website. Okay, fantastic. That was all of the reviews for today. Next week, we've got something special.
Yes.
We will be doing...
the entirety of Kick-Ass.
Including number 3. Thanks, Yukara. Yes, Kick-Ass 1, 2, and 3 will be here. We'll be talking about it in detail.
Yep.
So, yes, look out for it. Along with a whole bunch of other comics and manga and various other things, we'll probably have All You Need Is Kill.
Yep, hopefully.
Yeah, you'll have heard of it. It's that Live, Die, Repeat movie starring Tom Cruise. We've got the original manga for it. So,
yep.
Yep. And a little bit of Terraform Mars. No, it's not the plushies. What else are we doing next week, Ben? Batman. There will be Batman involved.
There will be Halo. There's a few things going on. We'll have a lot for you.
Anyway, we have been for panel.
Yep, I could hear the cogs going again when you're trying to remember the name.
Yeah, I know. For some reason, I keep wanting to say keyframe. I don't know why.
All right. Just can you remember your name?
No. Who am I? Okay. Who are you?
That was Rob. I was Ben. This has been for panel. We will see you next week.
Can I have pudding now?
Sure.